Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I presume we have all seen reports on the news about male violence, maybe heard a troubling story from a female friend, or witnessed a woman being treated unfairly. And at the time, have we wondered what men can do about it? Well, that is the name of a new book, a book just written by Sophie Gallagher, called How Men Can Help. And Sophie joins me via Zoom today on the programme. Sophie, lovely to talk to you. Good to see you as well. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
Great, thank you. How Men Can Help. Oof. This story of violence against women is a story that just, you know, goes back to time when it started. And I know that on the Irish programme I present here on Wednesday evenings, only last week I spoke to the CEO of an organisation called Safe Ireland that tries to help women in domestic violence situations or gender violence or whatever. And we were talking about a new initiative in pharmacies called Safe Pharmacies, where people can go and start to get help. So how widespread is this? Because, I mean, all of us men, you know, we kind of would think that we understand each other and know each other, but I suppose you can never know what's going on behind closed doors, can you?
No, absolutely. Firstly, thank you for having me. And I think you're quite right. I think one of the biggest things that men can do actually is to understand how widespread this is. So I think obviously we're not, you know, every 3 days there's a woman killed in the UK by a man. Most frequently that's by a partner or ex-partner. Now, obviously, that is the extreme end of this, right? Like that, you know, that's the most extreme form of this violence. But I think when we talk about kind of everyday harassment and violence against women, a survey by the UN in the UK found that 70% of women have experienced some form of harassment in public. And that number goes more up to more sort of like 80, 90% among younger women, so under 25. Now, I would say that's pretty widespread, right? I think that's one of the things that when we talk about how men can help here, it's understanding that yes, the very extreme things like what happened to Aisling Murphy or Sarah Everard, thankfully they're much rarer, but that kind of everyday, what we might call microaggressions, the kind of smaller harassment, is incredibly widespread. And you know, most women, if not all women, you know, will have experienced something. But often it's very normalized and we're just seen as it's something that we should just sort of accept because it happens so frequently, right?
I was trying to think about if I experienced something or knew that like a friend of mine was being violent towards a partner or somebody, a work colleague or whatever the case might be, what would I do? How would you broach the subject? If somebody in a workplace that I was aware of was being victimized because she was a woman, what would I do? How could I do it? You know, you can say just stand up and be a man and deal with it or whatever, but it's difficult. So what?
It's very difficult. It's incredibly difficult. And I think no one is, I wouldn't argue with that. I think it's incredibly, it is really difficult to say something, you know, because it's awkward, right? It's awkward. You know, it can be awkward, or there's those dynamics in the workplace. Do I want to say something? Should I say something? And often the moment comes and it passes and you think, oh God, I should have said something, and then it's over, right? And I think that's one of the things here. I'm not saying that the only way to help is to be Superman and stand up and intervene, or if you see a woman, you know, in the street or whatever, and put yourself. Lots of men are rightly kind of fearful of that, but there are lots of ways that you can, you know, before we get to that point of intervention, there are lots of other ways that you can do something along the way. So, okay, perhaps if, you know, you're in the pub and your friend is speaking, you know, inappropriately to his girlfriend, you might think, right, you could intervene at that moment, or you could take him aside later and say, you know, did you really need to deal with it like that? Or take her aside later and say, I saw what was happening. Is there anything I can do to help? We don't want to be too prescriptive, I think, when we're talking about this, because obviously there's a million different situations, right? But I think when we're thinking about this, we need men to understand how widespread it is, that it happens in all friendship groups, in all communities, and to kind of, you know, and to listen to the women around you about their stories. And then in these situations where it flares up, to think your only two options aren't do nothing or jump in, right? We've got other things we can do. Take him to one side, take her to one side, or, you know, try and have conversations about it perhaps at a later date, which I think sometimes can feel a bit cowardly, but actually maybe confronting someone in the moment won't get a good response from them. And then that isn't the best approach, right? So I think it's not just about thinking, if I can't do that in the moment, then I'm useless and I'm doing nothing. If everyone did a little bit more, it would be in a very different place. And I think we don't want people to feel like I have to intervene, even though I feel a bit unsafe doing it, or I'm worried about conflict or confrontation, or making it worse for the woman as well. Like, we don't know, you know, how that might play out. So it is really difficult. You know, it's similar to what's, you know, lots of conversation around anti-racism, right? Like, we all know we should say this stuff, but it can feel very confronting when you're in that moment to know what to say. And so knowing that you can do lots of little things, and that helps too. So don't feel like, well, I've failed, so I'm just going to stop and do nothing else.
In the book then, talk me through how it's structured, if you would, please.
Yeah, so it sort of starts off with talking about how common this is. So we sort of start off with a lot of statistics, a lot of research about, right, this is just the state of play. So I think one of the things I hear the most is, well, men are subject to lots of violence. And they are. Men are subject to lots of violence. That's not incorrect. But it's really gendered. So among both men and women, 90% of murders are committed by men, of men and women, and around 80% of rapes of both men and women are done by men. And domestic violence, 92% of domestic violence perpetrators are men. So yes, you're right, like, men are subject to lots of violence, but it's also by men. So if we could fix what's happening here, we'd help men as well. So we sort of start off with that. Then we move into talking about something called the monster myth, which is this idea that we all have in society, that the only people who do this are monsters, and they're on the outside, and none of us know them. And, you know, and actually, that's really, it's really dangerous, because I think it stops us seeing what's right in front of us a lot of the time. We brush things off or think, oh, it's not that bad. Oh, he's an all right guy, really. And actually, we all need to be kind of more aware of all the little things that happen every day that we can intervene and stop. And then we look at kind of history and culture, and how women, violence against women is sort of normalized through, you know, our laws and our culture and the media and things like that. And then towards the end, it's more about practical things, what men can actually do, like we were just saying about if you're in the pub and how to intervene. So it sort of sets the scene and then explains why this matters, and then hopefully gives you the tools to sort of to go forward and make some change in your life with that knowledge and understanding about why you need to do it. Because I think it's no use if someone just says you have to do this, but no one, you don't really understand why. So trying to set it in and sort of, this is why it's important, before we get to that.
If you're a man that is constantly or has a history of being violent towards a woman, or just mistreating her in some way, or maybe some psychological damage that goes on, how do you try and talk to a person like that? Because he probably won't see it as being anything other than normal behavior. How do you get through, basically?
Yeah, so I would say clearly there are some men who were never going to reach with this sort of work. Some men who don't see it as a problem, don't want to change, you know, and I think those people are always going to be hard to get through to. What there is, though, is a much larger majority of men, perhaps, who sometimes might not have always behaved in ways that they're proud of, because society teaches us that it's okay to, you know, make jokes about women being in the kitchen or what, you know, whatever, all those sort of things. We're sort of raised to believe that those things are like normal or it's funny or whatever. And we all might have behaved in ways that we're not particularly proud of. It's those men that I'm interested in getting through to, where I think there's this kind of like silent majority of men who do believe in things like Me Too and stuff like that, but they don't really know how to help, and, you know, they've got lots of women who they care about and they worry about and that sort of thing. So with those men, I think this sort of work can't be used as a way to rehabilitate your image or present yourself as something. If you're still harming women in private, it can't be used for that. But what it can be, I think, is it doesn't need to be something that men feel like, well, actually, when I'm 17, I behave, you know, I was quite a misogynist, and so I feel a bit of a hypocrite now, you know, doing this. Like, we can all do better. We can all be, you know, we can all be apologetic for, you know, perhaps ways we've done in the past and try and do better. So getting through to those men is about understanding that, you know, lots of us have been conditioned to behave in ways that perhaps are harmful to women. And instead of becoming defensive about that, listening and trying to improve our behavior going forward, you know, it's, we all obviously have, you know, as individuals, we can, you know, choose to behave in certain ways or not. But we're also conditioned a lot to think that things are normal when they're not. And so this is about a process of learning and trying to do better and making up for perhaps where we've caused harm in the past. And I think there is a lot of capacity there for change among a majority of men. Some will never reach, and that's hard, but, you know, but that's sort of the truth. But there is a much bigger group of men who I do really think do want to do better. They just don't quite know how, and that's who we're trying to reach.
A question that I asked that lady I was talking to, Mary McDermott from Safe Ireland last week, is about education. How soon do we start to educate the young boys and young girls? The boys basically to point out that this behaviour is not right, and also for girls so that they recognise it when they're a little bit older and when they start to mix with boys and so on. How soon do we start with that?
So from, you know, when I've spoken to, obviously I'm not an expert in education, but from people who I have spoken to who are, they've sort of said, we can start this really early, right from the start. And that doesn't mean talking about sex or talking about violence with people who are very young. What it means is teaching healthy and respectful relationships, boundaries, you know, right from the start. You know, things like sharing a pencil in class, how you talk to each other, respectful communication, respectful boundaries, you know, not having entitlement and things like that. You can teach that, you know, that's not that, you know, in age-appropriate ways, you can teach that from very early on. And I think that you're right to bring up education, because I think a lot of this, as I've said, is stuff that we're sort of conditioned to believe is normal. And actually, the way you change that long-term is by starting right at the start, and not having things like cultures in schools where it's normal for, you know, boys to feel, you know, like they're more important or more, you know, than the girls that they're alongside. And so I think that starting really early on is something that we should be looking at in age-appropriate ways, as I've said.
I don't think you can ask a question like this anymore of maybe a 5 or 6 year old boy or girl. But, you know, when we were all growing up, when I was growing up in the 70s, you know, you're aunt or your uncle or your granny would say, well, have you a girlfriend yet? You know, and lads that age will say something like, girls are yucky. Or, you know, a girl will say, boys are yucky. Is that like where you start? Is that like, you know, that's so lovely and you giggled at it. And if we were at a birthday party and all the aunts and uncles were there and the nephews and the nieces and that was said, we'd all laugh, right? Mm-hmm. But is that, do we have to take it to that level and say, well, actually, look, they're not, boys aren't yucky and girls aren't yucky. And, you know, do we take the fun out of things, but yet not send messages that would clearly help?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And you're right, I did giggle. And if, you know, because we're taught that that's kind of funny and it's sweet, but actually, you're right. In lots of ways, that sort of question is always a bit, you know, even just the presumption, I think, you know, we've spoken about this a lot recently with, you know, trying to be more inclusive of, you know, even the presumption that it would be a girlfriend or a boyfriend or whatever, all those sort of things. I think no one's saying that we shouldn't make any jokes about any of this sort of stuff, because that's obviously just, you know, we're not going to reach people. I think we're being really, you know, puritanical about that, but it's more just understanding actually how all those little things do add up to paint a picture in a young child's head of like what, you know, what girls are or what boys are, and how we should interact with them. So yeah, I'm not sure I'd say we definitely shouldn't make jokes about that. You know, because as you say, I did laugh as well. But I think it's considering how all those little things feed into perceptions and how we grow up and how we interact with each other and trying to be more mindful of that sort of stuff, I guess.
When I was talking about you behind your back before you joined us, and I was I was saying who we had coming up on the programme, I reading from the notes, I said you were an award-winning journalist and campaigner. Is this the campaigning that you do? Is this what you're involved in?
Yeah, so I so what I was campaigning on actually was, so in England and Wales, we still don't have a law against something called cyber flashing, which is the unsolicited sending of sexual images. So when about 5 years ago, I was on the tube and I was sent 120 explicit images without my consent on Bluetooth, which was obviously quite a shock. And so that was the work I did, was trying to, so in Scotland, there's a law against that and has been for a long time. And so it was trying to introduce a similar law here, because that was just, that wasn't against the law to do that, even though it's, you know, it's flashing, but digital, basically. Obviously we have a law against flashing. So to my mind, there was no reason why we shouldn't have a similar law online, especially because increasingly, as we use technology more and more, we're only going to see more and more of this sort of thing. So that was the work I did there. And, you know, that sort of behaviour is really widespread as well. And that comes back to similar themes of, you know, entitlement and power. And that's a really gendered thing as well. You don't, you know, it's mostly women who are on the receiving end of that, and mostly men who are perpetrating it and sort of asking questions around, well, why? Why is that? You know, why do men, you know, strangers on a train feel entitled to send that to a woman without her consent? And you don't get that the other way around. And that comes back to a lot of the same questions about men are taught to kind of, you know, actually, as a man, you are allowed to kind of express your sexuality like that, and you're entitled to do that, and that's sort of okay. And we need to unpick why that is. It's not just some weird coincidence that women don't do it the same way. It's because we're taught, you know, we're raised to be, you know, women aren't entitled in public space to dominate men in the same way. That's not how it works. So kind of unpicking that and, you know, seeing how it feeds these really toxic behaviours. So, yeah.
All right. Was there one thing that you came away with having written this book that you kind of didn't know it was kind of a wow for you?
One of the most surprising things for me was actually how many instances there are of women reporting to the police that they were worried that they were going to be killed by their partners, essentially, and not being taken seriously, and then ending up dead. That is a much higher number than you would have put. You know, there are instances and instances of this happening where women go to the police, they go to the people they think are going to protect them and say, I'm really worried that this is going to happen. There was one example of a woman in Sussex called Shana Grice, who was issued a fixed penalty notice for wasting police time, and she ended up dead. And exactly, she had said, this is what's going to happen. They told her that she was issued this fine, this £90 fine for wasting police time, and then she was killed. And so that was actually one of the most shocking things for me, even though I've done a lot of work on this, is just actually how consistently we don't believe women, even to that extent, with, you know, with that kind of horrendous outcome. So, you know, that was one of the most shocking things for me in doing this.
All right. The book is simply titled How Men Can Help. It's not a men-only book, though. I would imagine I can understand how a man would benefit from reading such a book. But I presume women should or could read it and enjoy it and learn and maybe help to educate sons, nephews, partners, whatever the case might be.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's for everyone, and hopefully there's a lot in there that women can take away from it as well.
All right. Sophie Gallagher, the author of How Men Can Help, thanks a million for talking to us. I hope that it's of huge benefit to many people, and that we'll see a lot less of the male violence towards women in the coming years. Thanks a million for talking to us.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.